This is podcast number 9 for the Well-Educated Mother's Heart. I'm Marlene Peterson, and today we're talking about the preschool years. Now that I've spent several days talking about some of the philosophies behind the Well-Educated Heart, I'd like to start to try and begin to translate that into what it actually looks like. Today I'm going to focus on the preschool years, and in the next podcast I'm going to make some suggestions for the high school years. There's a presentation I did for HACOA a while back called History for the Well-Educated Heart, where I go through the developmental stages of learning and I begin to paint a picture of what this looks like there that I hope will be helpful as well. I'm going to link that in the program notes if you haven't already watched that. If you have preschoolers, I would encourage you to drop the notion that you need a curriculum to teach them. I see two primary learning objectives that should guide these years: relationships and impressions. Let's look at relationships first. Have you listened to Dr. Gordon Neufeld's talk yet? I'll link it again in the podcast notes. It really is worth taking the time to listen to it. Here are two vital takeaways from that talk. First, the young seek for something to attach to, and once it attaches, it grows to become like that to which it attaches. And second, you cannot parent a child whose heart you do not have. The first one is a reminder to keep feeding your own heart. Your children are learning by your example, which will speak way louder than the words you speak. If you want them to learn to love reading, then you need to show them a love of reading. And the second one isn't really separate from the first one. The most important lessons you will teach your little ones are that they are of great worth, that they are cherished, and that they belong. Also, the feeling that home is safe and a good place to be. These impressions will be as an anchor to their souls their entire lives. It's not your words that will communicate it. It will be through the music in your voice. Is it always harsh and yelling, or is it sweet and soft? It will be through touch. It will be through eye-to-eye contact. It will be through you being totally present in the moment of contact. They'll forget the details of the days, but they will carry with them for a lifetime the impressions that were made on their hearts. I know life with preschoolers is hectic and messy and loud. Days rarely go as planned. You have to stay flexible and open. You are going to lose it from time to time. But if you can only manage one moment in every day to be completely present and connected, eye to eye, as a young mom puts it, you only have to be once a day amazing. These moments will make deep and long-lasting impressions. It may be the walk around the neighborhood holding hands, the hug and the squeeze, and perhaps the most important moment of the day, tucking a child in at night. Aim to be at least once a day amazing, and then don't be hard on yourself for the rest of the day. I think the preschool years were some of the most challenging for me as a parent. I remember being so tired, and it was a big adjustment to go from only having to watch out for myself to suddenly having all these little ones who were demanding my attention 24 hours a day. So be kind to yourself if you have preschoolers. Enjoy it for what it is. It really passes by quickly. The primary teaching tools that you have for the first years are rhymes, singing, music, pictures, and nature. All of these activities are bonding activities. Don't underestimate the value of Mother Goose rhymes. They're nonsensical to us, on purpose. Their value is in their rhythm and their rhyme, not in their meaning. Studies have shown that poetry, because of its rhythm and rhyme, help bring order to the chaotic brain. Little children love the familiar, so you get a lot of mileage even out of a few of them. If somehow you miss those rhymes as a child, you'll find a ton of them in the S2 online library. The reason little children pick up foreign languages so much easier than adults is because they're picking up the music of the language, not necessarily the words. Surround them with beautiful language even though they may not yet understand all that you say. In fact, don't worry about reading stories to them aloud even though they're not comprehending what you're saying. That music of speech is going to be so important down the road, especially in reading comprehension later. Be a singing mom. It doesn't matter what the quality of your voice is. This is also another connecting moment. The We Sing series has a lot of great tried and proven favorites. Never make it about teaching new songs. Let your children learn to sing by singing. Singing is one of the few activities you can do at the same time together, and it can be incredibly bonding. Give them a taste for beautiful music. Play a variety of music in the background of your day, and especially include classical music so that it becomes a familiar language. One of the important activities of toddlerhood is naming things. They naturally want to know everybody's name and the name of everything. Think how chaotic your world would be if no one you knew had names. What if you were referred to as the tall lady with blonde hair? Or what if you wanted to call one of your children, you would say the one with the red hair, but what if they all have red hair? It would get pretty frustrating, wouldn't it? We have to name things. But don't buy a lot of vocabulary books. Name objects and people in the real world as your child comes in contact with them. Although picture vocabulary books can be fun to test and reinforce that knowledge, you don't have to rely upon them. I love that my father taught me names of flowers instead of just saying they were all flowers. From the time I was little, I knew the hibiscus, the camellia, the hydrangea, and the gardenia, and I loved them. Naming things is a big deal. And again, you certainly don't need a curriculum for it. You don't need a worksheet to teach the color green. Just go outside on a summer day and exclaim, "Look how green the grass is." Children learn best in context. Toddlers, of course, love looking at pictures. Be aware of the images they're taking in. Expose them to beautiful art, but use subjects they can relate to, such as children and families, animals and flowers. And look for ways to expose them to real life rather than just pictures in the book. Visit the fire station, the bank. Introduce your child to the produce man at the grocery store. How many different scenes can you create for them to add to their stockpile of impressions, complete with sight, scent, sound, touch, and even taste? That's so much better than just a picture in a book. And the memory of you taking them to such places is a big bonus. Let your first stories be about familiar things as well. I kind of cringe when I hear a mom ask for a suggestion for a book about the Civil War, for instance, for a four-year-old. It's just not the time. There will be time later. In early childhood, you want to make impressions for that which is good and beautiful so that they will acquire a taste for that. Let there be innocence in childhood. Their most favorite stories will likely be the stories you tell them of when you were a little girl or daddy was a little boy. They want stories they connect to, and your family stories will give them a sense of belonging. Now to the second part, impressions. Our friend Pestalozzi used the word Anschauung, which has proven difficult in, well, first of all in me saying it, but also for scholars to find a good translation. The one that has satisfied educators the most is sense impression. A little child learns about the world he's in through his senses, his sight, touch, smell, hearing, and taste. These are the gateways. Allow a child the freedom to discover and explore, and they'll pick up a million lessons without you having to do any direct teaching. Your primary role is to create a safe environment and be nearby to make sure he doesn't do serious harm to himself. It's those sense impressions that make nature the perfect classroom. I have yet to see a child who doesn't prefer playing with water, sand, and mud to plastic toys. In fact, this is my experience with toys. I used numerous systems to get my kids' toys organized, and the way they played them was consistent. I would spend hours putting them in proper bins on shelves, and then they would come into the playroom with glee and proceed to dump out every bin on the floor, spread them around the room so that there was no empty space, and then go off to find something else to do. I've noticed the same play activity with my grandchildren. It is only dawning on me now that I was fighting a losing battle. Children actually need very little in the way of toys, and if you're spending hours in chaos because of all the toys spread all over the house, maybe you need to reconsider their place in your home. With toys, more is definitely less, and less is more. The gift my mother gave me was the gift of time and imagination, although I don't think she was doing it on purpose. I remember hours of imaginative play in the flowers in the backyard. I remember creating cities out of the stones on our fireplace hearth. I'd use whatever I found around to create stories. I specifically remember marble families. I had a few paper dolls and one baby doll, although I didn't play with it much. I think tablets and instant entertainment gratification is robbing our kids of their imaginative powers. We're so quick to step in and entertain them, but let a child be bored, and eventually they'll find something to occupy themselves. Do feed them stories to feed their imagination. If I were to do it over again, I think I would have replaced all the plastic toys with a big box of good quality wooden blocks with different shapes and a bag of little wood people figures along with some toy cars. From those, they could have built their own dollhouses and cities and forts and castles and stories for hours of endless play. And cleanup would have been easy. They would all go into one box and we'd be done. Maybe in the beginning you need to get them started and play with them, but once they begin to see the possibilities, children have wonderful imaginations with which to create. Along with that, be sure and have a box of dress-up toys and props. Can you think of what else they would really need? The same goes for outside. I took a few of my grandchildren to the park last summer, and after they got tired of the swings and such, we were going to head home, but one of them got dirty hands. So we walked over to a little creek to wash them off. And that's when the real fun began. I sat on the grass and watched them dig in the mud with sticks and float things down the water and watch dragonflies and create dams. It was by far the funnest part of the day. Children like real things. They're smart that way. Think of all the sensory impressions being made. How many of the senses are being used with plastic toys? I've watched nature's effect on crying grandbabies. When nothing I can do will calm them down, almost without fail, taking them outside to the sway of the trees and the feel of the grass and the breeze on their faces has brought order back into their little systems. It works for grown-ups, too. Nature's classroom is also conducive to running and jumping, spinning and climbing and twirling. Studies show the necessity of movement for connecting neural pathways in their bodies. Sedentary sitting at desks in classrooms is preventing those vital connections from being made. And there just isn't room inside a home for those large body movements. Throw in the fresh air and sunshine, not to mention the fact that when your children are playing outside, your house is staying clean. It's a win-win proposition. I just posted an article in the Facebook group written by a woman who made it a point of taking her children out to play in nature for a couple of hours every day. She said they didn't have any temper tantrums for a year. And shall I remind you that nature is free if you're on a tight budget? Home is also a natural classroom for life. Is it really more satisfying to pay a lot of money for an easy bake oven than it is to help mommy measure and stir and bake a real cake? Even household chores can feel like play to little children. They love to match socks with mommy and carry loads of towels to bathrooms. They love to squirt windows and wipe them off. My daughter said that her little girls used to fight over who got to scrub the toilets with the toilet brush. I read the autobiography of Kate Douglas Wiggin, who wrote Rebecca of Sunnybrook Farm, and she was also instrumental in bringing the kindergarten program to the United States. In the chapter where she wrote about memories of her childhood, she wrote, "Life was by no means all play, but the idea never dawned upon us that there was anything wearisome or obnoxious about work. Our childish duties and cares were as many and as diverse, thank heaven, as our plays and pleasures. We helped in everything and divided the responsibilities of the household as if we belonged to the working class instead of being the children of a well-to-do physician. So much has to do with our own attitudes that will rub off on our children. I wish I had known that lesson as a young mother. I think I spent way too much time worrying about trying to keep a clean house rather than trying to build healthy relationships with work for my children. Although I do have to admit, in spite of my shortcomings, each of my children in their own way and time have learned to keep nice homes." Which reminds me, Children are very resilient and learn in many different ways. I see too many moms piling guilt on themselves that they're ruining their children. I have two words for that. Stop it. Doing the best you can in the moment and in the circumstances you are in is enough. I put a lot of ideal living out there, but they're for directional pull, not to make you feel like a failure. If you want to include preschoolers with older siblings in the rotation schedule, the age-appropriate parts will be the music, the songs, stories of children from other lands, stories of families in other lands, especially if they happen to be members of your own family tree, simple craft activities, scenes from other countries, a few words from the language, a game, occasionally a movie, and did I say food? Yes, food. I won't take the time here to talk about all the advantages for later learning that will come as you fill their preschool years with sense impressions rather than trying to force academic ABCs on them. A sense of wonder which comes from their senses and a connection to you and family is by far more important at this stage than anything else. And now I'm going to close with a little poem for you. I'm not sure who wrote it. Yes, I know there are stains on my carpet, the traces of small muddy boots, and I see your fair tapestry glowing all spotless with flowers and fruit. And I know that my walls are disfigured with prints of small fingers and hands, and that your own household most truly is in immaculate purity stands. And I know that my parlor is littered with many odd treasures and toys, while your own is in daintiest order, unharmed by the presence of boys. And I know that my room is invaded quite boldly all hours of the day, while you sit in yours unmolested and dream the soft quiet away. Yes, I know there are four little bedsides where I must stand watchful each night, while you may go out in your carriage and flash in your dresses so bright. Now, I think I'm a neat little woman, and I like my house orderly too, and I'm fond of all dainty belongings, yet I would not change places with you. No, keep your fair home with its order, its freedom from bother and noise, and keep your own fanciful leisure, but give me my four splendid boys. Bye-bye. See you next time.